Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello, and welcome to another Project Love podcast episode. This is Selena, the life design and career change coach of the duo. And I have been so looking forward to sharing today's episode with you. I got to interview the wonderful Ruby Warrington, who has just come out with her third book, The Sober Curious Reset, Change the Way You Drink in 100 Days or Less. Ruby has been such an inspiration to Vicky and me over the years. She's an author, writer, a former Sunday Times style features editor. And in 2013, around the time we started Project Love, she created The Numinous, an online magazine that just soared to great heights and has been at the forefront of conversations about modern spirituality. She then went on to write Material Girl, Mystical World, and then Sober Curious. And this, the Sober Curious Reset, is a follow-on from that. So Sober Curious is all about sobriety and choosing not to drink and exploring your relationship with alcohol. The Sober Curious Reset takes that and turns it into a 100-day challenge. So when I first read the book, I thought it was absolutely brilliant, but thought, you know what? Right now, I don't really feel like I'm in need of doing a Sober Curious Reset. I have a good relationship with alcohol. I don't drink too much these days. But after speaking to Ruby, I was completely sold. This is so much more than a book for someone who feels like they've got a bit of a troubled relationship with alcohol or they're depending a little too much on alcohol. It's definitely brilliant for that. And it's brilliant if you're doing Dry January. But actually, it turns out that this is just a fantastic tool for personal growth and self-development. So I started it on the 1st of January. I'm doing Sober Curious Reset. It's already challenged me because I've definitely wanted a drink over the past few weeks. 2021 turns out to be a lot harder in my world than 2020. However, you get these journaling questions throughout the book and it is so good. It is so powerful. So here I am talking to Ruby about the book, about her own journey, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And if you want to join the Sober Curious Challenge, then you can go and order your copy now. The book is now out. So yeah, grab yourself a copy, start the journey with me, and let me know how you find it. So here's the episode. Enjoy. Ruby Warrington, welcome and thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
I tell you what, it's such an honour to have you here because Vicky and I started Project Love, I think about a year after you started The Numinous. And so we saw you skyrocket and you were just like the person we watched. So to have you here on the podcast is such an honour. I have so many questions to ask you, not just about your books, but about other things. But we are here today to talk about the Sober Curious Reset, which is the follow-on from your book, Sober Curious. Mm-hmm. I've got to say, I absolutely loved it. I don't need to say that. I truly loved it. I've not read one of your books before. I love your writing so much. It's my kind of language. And I wasn't necessarily thinking about going on a Sober Curious Reset, but reading it, I was like, this is something that whether you're struggling with alcohol or not, seems like such a powerful, like personal growth journey. What I wanted to ask you first was what led you to wanting to write about sobriety and looking at alcohol, and what's your story that got you writing about this?
It's so great to be able to talk to somebody who's been there from the beginning. And when I say from the beginning, meaning from my kind of Numinous days. So for people who don't know about the Numinous, this was my, I created a platform to really investigate all sorts of different avenues into modern spirituality. Mm. And that sort of showed how we could use things like astrology, tarot, energy work, all sorts of different modalities in our sort of modern you know, sped up city lives often, to, yeah, do some kind of self-inquiry, I suppose. And it was part of that path ultimately that led to me questioning my drinking, because I realized I had never thought of myself as a problem drinker. I'm from the UK. Alcohol is very much ingrained in the culture, as we know. It's just something that we all do. And I drank quite heavily, although, like I said, it didn't seem like there was anything wrong with my drinking. I was just a normal social drinker, like all of my friends. Mm. And so I'd never questioned why I was using alcohol and what perhaps I might be covering up with drinking. As far as I was concerned, I drank just to have more fun and be more sociable and to maybe be more confident, you know, yeah. That was it. But underneath that, there's so much to look at. And it was when I started engaging with all of these tools that I was investigating and researching for the Numinous that I began to realize how much was lurking underneath my drinking, underneath my normal kind of regular old social drinking habit. It was a deep, deep lack of self-esteem, which again is such a blanket term. But then when we really look at what are the causes of my low self-esteem, there's some very, very deep areas that sort of can take a person as it pertains to a, you know, a healing journey, a wellness journey even. And so it was through that kind of inner self inquiry that I was doing that I began to realize that alcohol had actually been a much bigger crutch for me than I'd ever realized. And that it was actually masking a lot of stuff in my life that it was probably time for me to look at. So you're absolutely right. The sober curious reset, I feel like it's a bit of a wolf in sheep's clothing, although the other way around, because it's actually really beneficial and healing. But it's sort of like, hey, look at your drinking. Maybe it's not that healthy for you. Maybe, you know, it's not making you feel great. And then once you get inside, I'm like, now let's look at everything that's happening in your life underneath the drinking. And it is a real journey of self-discovery, that 100-day process.
What I love, so it's changed the way you drink in 100 days or less. What I loved about it, because I've designed quite a lot of different kind of journeys of growth and healing and self-discovery over the years, what's so beautiful about it is you can tell how powerful it is because it feels so bite-sized. Each step, it feels like you look at each one individually and it feels, oh, that's doable. Oh, I can look at that, but you can tell how deep it goes. So it's got that, it's kind of, you feel the depth of it and the simplicity, and it's just, oh yeah, I haven't started doing it. I'm not, for full disclosure, I had to quickly read through it before, but I haven't started doing it, but it's definitely, it's really got me thinking how powerful it would be to actually just do this for myself, even though I'm not concerned about my drinking. I was very much like you, certainly in my 20s and my early 30s, I was very much of, you know, we partied hard, we played hard, and I enjoyed it, but it definitely went too far, like a lot in those days. Now that changed, partly because of having my coaching clients, but also then becoming a parent and hangovers with a child are just not worth.
Not that that's worth stops everybody. I mean, the whole kind of wine mum culture is really huge here in the US. I don't really know how the conversation is around that in the UK.
Yes, but it is in the UK. It's
G&T. Doesn't necessarily what prevents drinking. Oftentimes, it can exacerbate it, and oftentimes, I think it might be a time when it potentially tips more from the kind of hedonism into the escapism, which are two sides of a similar coin. But when we're drinking to escape is when it can start to get a bit dangerous, because we come to rely on that escape from this difficult situation, and we don't actually muster the courage or find the actual tools to deal with what we're actually faced with in reality.
Well, this is what I found. So my son was born he's five now. And when I first kind of stepped into the mom world, there are a lot of things about it that I didn't really like, the online mum world. But there was this strong thing about you get through the day and you're just waiting for that G&T. And I just, the more I saw this being kind of celebrated, the more I was just like, but hang on a minute, why we need to address why we're feeling so awful. That is like, that's the focus. That's the goal at the end of the day. One of the things you talk about, and look, I've got a little cat has appeared on
Larry.
Screen. I've got one right next to me. I told her she could come in if she didn't disturb me. Replace drinking with cats. One of the things, I loved you talked about in there was the cult of drinking in our society and how we use it for celebration, for commiseration, for winding down, letting off steam, like for so many. And I've just written a book on burnout. And one of the things it did keep coming up was this thing of there's nothing wrong with having a drink. Like for sure, like go for it. But when it becomes the thing that you use to help you to switch off, blow off steam, recover from a heavy week, that, you know, the drinking alcohol, actually the bad sleep you get from drinking alcohol, the fact that it doesn't actually allow you to really process what's going on, it doesn't really help you to switch off and wind down in a healthy way. And that is the thing, isn't it, that people come up against when they first try to go without alcohol, is realizing how much it's embedded in all of these sort of modern day rituals and cultural traditions. What are the most common things that you found or you find other people really struggle with that is part of that cult of drinking?
I mean, the first one that people come up against is just the huge expectation that there is from others to drink and to participate in the drinking culture, and a real fear around alienation if you're going to get out of the cult, if you're going to unbrainwash yourself and be like, no, this isn't for me, I'm stepping back. A lot of fear about judgment from other people around that choice, which is an incredibly personal choice and definitely not something that is ever undertaken lightly. And I think it's just really sad that somebody who's being brave enough or having enough courage to actually kind of go, I'm going to go without this prop and I'm going to be at the cold face of life and I'm going to see what happens. A lot of the time what they'll get from their family and friends is like, that's weird. What the fuck would you want to do that for? Like, you know, and it's just, I think that's something that really, that's the first thing that comes up for people. But then it really comes down to what you've been using alcohol for. Again, when we look at the drinking culture, we don't really see the nuance between around why different people are using it. But actually that's what all of this self-inquiry is about. A lot of the exercises in the book will be guiding you to really work out like, well, what's been my main reason for using alcohol? And you might have different reasons in different situations, but you mentioned burnout and using alcohol to relax and switch off. And I'm a total workaholic also. again, a highly celebrated kind of addiction in our society.
Yeah.
Also one that's very much tied into our material survival and security. So very challenging to look at. But lots of us use alcohol as a way to kind of switch off and relax. And for me, that was the big one. So then it was like, the fear was, well, how am I going to relax? Oh my God, my brain's just never going to stop. I'm never going to stop working. And so my work has been really proactively looking at other ways that I can switch off, relax and unwind that don't include alcohol. And that can be really challenging because it's things like yoga, meditation, and they're just not as quote unquote fun or glamorous or cool or doing a crossword with a cup of tea. I'm like, oh, wow. And again, it's all this cultural messaging around like what that says about me as a person.
Yeah.
It makes me boring. It makes me an old lady. It makes me not fun, et cetera, et cetera. But actually it's sort of what my brain needs to relax, you know? So a lot of the fears will be quite, there's the general one around like, how am I going to be ostracized for this choice? Where's my place in my group? We have huge, deep fears around not being accepted, around not fitting in. It's enormous. Don't underestimate like the psychological impact of that. And then we have individual fears and challenges around, well, what am I going to use to replace this substance that's been performing a role for me?
Yeah. It's so interesting when you just said before about how, you know, saying to family and friends, well, I'm giving it I'm giving it a go to see what it's like at the cold face of
life. I'm gonna show up at the cold face of life. I'm gonna remove this warm, cozy buffer.
Yeah, but do you know what?
Takes the edge off.
But no one has ever said that to me at a party before. Like if people are like, yeah, I'm not drinking right now because, well, I just, you know, I've just been hitting it too hard. I just needed a bit of a break, or they won't turn up at the party.
Right.
So I have a partner who periodically will abstain from alcohol and sugar and wheat and like everything. And but then what he does is he also abstains from seeing anyone else other than us and becomes extremely kind of boring. But I don't mean boring because he's not eating the sugar and drinking the drinks. But I mean, because he's just like, down he's in the dumps because he's not seeing
disengaged from life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so he's not happy doing it. It feels like punishment, but he feels he also needs to. Whereas what right. I loved about your book was that it's like the kind of the rules of the game, not that it's a game, but that's the way I kind of like to see things, is that you don't stop saying yes to invitations and you do go out. And I was just thinking how refreshing it would be if someone said to me, oh yeah, no, I'm not drinking. Why? Well, because I'm just seeing what shows up for me, like what comes up for me when I do that. It's like a really interesting, you know, personal growth journey. I've never heard anyone say that. That does excite me though.
Wouldn't it be cool if we did? And you can imagine the kind of conversations. You can imagine you'd probably get some eye rolls as well, depending on how. And I think when that happens, that's a real flag as to like, okay, so you're not willing to look at what's going on. Like if someone instantly dismisses the fact that you're saying, you know what, I think that this has actually been getting in the way of me living as my true self. An eye roll at that does say a lot about the person doing the eye rolling and whether they feel like they're living as their true selves. And even unconsciously, what kind of is behind that very dismissive behavior where people are projecting their own judgments around perhaps what it would be like for them or their own drinking or what it would be like for them to consider what it means to be live as their true self, you know? So it's just interesting. Not that anything is right or wrong. We're all just kind of doing our best to get by at the end of the day, particularly coming out of a year like 2020. But I do, you know, part of the whole work with Sober Curious in general is to just encourage people to actually talk about what's going on with the fact that we use this highly addictive, toxic substance on a regular basis to not feel certain things in our lives or to feel more of the other things in our lives. Like, what's going on with that? Why do we just blindly accept it? And why do we kind of accept alcohol as part of the fabric of our lives and sort of downplay all of what we know are the negative side effects? We know it's not good for us. We know that it is painful, physically, emotionally, mental, in the aftermath of drinking. And yet we just sort of happily accept that without question. And I'm like, well, let's question it, actually.
Do you feel that your life has... So how long have you been sober for?
Well, it's interesting. I don't really have a sober date.
Right.
Because unlike with addiction recovery and that sort of model, I'm not, as much as I choose abstinence, I'm not fully abstinent. And it's confusing. It's difficult to even talk about this because there isn't really a model for this that we can look at. We're just also making it up as we go along. But back to your original question, I originally got Sober Curious started questioning my drinking about 10 years ago. And it's been a slow journey of just kind of backing off more and more and more and more to the point where I would say for the past two and a half years, I haven't thought about myself as a drinker at all on any level. I never think about alcohol. It's just a non-thing for me. It's just not part of my life. That said, I did have a glass of wine this summer, like one glass of wine that I've had all year. And it was really interesting in which situation that came up. I think it was actually in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing and all the, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests that were occurring. I just felt so overwhelmed by the hideous kind of inequalities of the world. And I was feeling complete, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I couldn't stop crying. I just felt completely overwhelmed. And I felt like I actually... a glass of wine would just take the edge off here.
Yeah.
And it did. And I was aware that it wasn't the healthiest way to do it. But in that circumstance, it just felt like, and it was interesting that just to think about how readily we do that, how readily we reach for a glass of wine when things are difficult, when we're experiencing challenges, when emotions are overwhelming. And I guess I was just really thankful that I got to a place where, given everything that we've been through in the past, say, 4 years, there was like one occasion when I felt like that was an appropriate thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I consider myself a non-drinker, but I'm also not militant about abstinence because for me, that mentality is, I'm a real perfectionist by nature. And that's another reason I drank, was to allow myself off the hook of kind of being perfect, right?
Really? That is, see, this is what I think is so fascinating because it's such a brilliant tool. You take alcohol out of the equation and it just has layer after layer after layer after layer of what you discover is lying underneath. That's why I think it's such a powerful self-development tool. Take alcohol out of the picture and watch what happens.
And watch what
there's
happens.
There's going to be
all
so
your
much.
Stuff. There's literally all your stuff.
Yeah.
And now you have a whole hamper of things to work on. Lucky you. And obviously some of that's going to be really painful and really challenging as well.
Yeah.
With the reset, I wanted to give people the sense that they were being guided and supported through it. And there are multiple points when I mention, you may feel like now would be a time to, you know, book some extra therapy sessions. Definitely make sure you've got some people to talk to throughout this as you're kind of like going through some of the deeper parts of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, to go back to that piece about the sort of all or nothing approach, for me, the mentality of like, if I don't drink for a year and then I have a drink and I've messed up because I've like fallen off the wagon, that keys back into that kind of like perfectionist mentality, which would beat myself up for not getting everything right and for not meeting all my goals, and would be more likely in that place of low self-esteem to then drink. So for me, I prefer to take it day by day. And I was talking to someone about this the other day and I hadn't even really thought about it, but it's actually at the core of the whole philosophy here. If I'm, rather than setting a goal, I'm going to do a month off drinking, when I'm thinking about the last day of that month and how I'm going to get there, if I'm like, I'm just going to not be a non-drinker and I'm going to assess as to whether this is something I want in my life. And I ask myself each day, do I want to drink today? Really? No. I'm proactively choosing every day something that feels good for me, versus kind of like denying myself something pleasurable for the duration of 30 days or whatever until I can like drink again.
Yeah.
So it's just a real mindset shift.
Yeah. You know? It makes such a difference, because one of them is feels punishing, abstinence, waiting desperately to when you hit day 30 and then you can glug down two bottles of wine and get, fall off the wagon again.
Right.
And the other one is going each day being curious, even if on one day, like you did on that one time and what it was 4 years, when, you know what, I am going to have it. And I know why I'm doing it. I'm doing it with, you know, self-awareness and that curiosity and recognizing why I'm doing it. And I am
And also recognizing, I know how addictive this is. I know how easily it can be to get sucked back into those patterns I don't want to be in anymore. And so I'm going to take this and I'm going to take it as if it's a medication. I'm going to take it as if it's like, you know, a medication for this one incident and that's it. And in that circumstance, it was really strange, actually. I've described it because I told a couple of the people about it and I was described it as like, you know, when you go to the dentist and they're doing something really painful in your mouth, but they've numbed you, but you can still feel what they're doing. You know that something wrong is happening in your mouth.
Yeah.
You can't actually feel it. It was kind of like that. It was like, oh yeah, okay. I can't feel what I was feeling, but I know I'm not happy still. It's not like the alcohol has made me happy. I just can't feel what was distressing me. And so I'm getting a modicum of relief from that, but it's not actually making me happy and it's not actually changing the situation. And it's certainly not giving me the, you know, the courage, the inspiration, the resilience to actually consider what I might do with my life in order to, you know, help move us towards a more equitable society. So yeah, it was an interesting thought experiment in a way.
Yeah.
And I talk about that in the first Sober Curious book, that sometimes what might be termed a relapse, if we approach it with that mentality of curiosity and sort of observer's mindset, it can become just a reminder of why we don't use that, or why that's not actually the most helpful resource or tool for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I'm seeing it from the point of view of someone who would find this just an interesting experiment, but obviously it's also, you know, people can use it when they've really recognized they have a real problem with alcohol, which I feel during lockdown, quite a lot of people, I do know a lot of people that were like really used alcohol as a way to get through it. I mean, I had friends who said that they just got totally smashed on the weekend because it helped them. They, particularly the ones that didn't have children, it helped them delineate between the week and the weekend, because everything just felt all the same. And it was like a way, and then almost being hungover would have them, it was a way of like passing the time on the weekend when they didn't have work. And it like, you know, really became this sort of crutch. So when people, would you recommend a book like this if people really are recognizing that they've got quite a problem, although like you say, that you also encourage people to get therapy if it feels like they need some extra help. Presumably this is really good if people are really struggling with alcohol usage.
Yeah, my hope is that I will meet anyone where they're at, really. Mm. And I'd invite anyone who's questioning their drinking at whatever level to engage with the work. And it might be like, I know several people kind of in my friendship group who got sober curious with me and have actually found their way to AA and have recognized that the 12-step programs have been really supportive work for them and seen that actually there isn't any shame in going to AA or like, you know, admitting that you're an alcoholic. Actually, there's many people in those organizations who don't look what we'd think of as an alcoholic drinker, for example. And it's such a great free resource as well. So I'd always encourage people to check that out, especially in this time of lockdown. It's so much easier to try out a couple of meetings if you don't have to engage in person. You can just log into a Zoom thing and stay even more anonymous and sort of check it out, see if it resonates. But yeah, I hope that it would meet people wherever they're at. I think you're absolutely right about the lockdown drinking. I think this situation has really shone a light on so many different areas of our lives, right? And really helped us see what's not working, what is working, where we've been using a crutch to kind of like, you know, even if your crutch is like getting out of the house every day because actually you don't really, your home life isn't fulfilling to you and you feel trapped or kind of, you know, whatever there. So I think similarly, it's shone a light on all of our drinking habits. Mm. A lot of people, I think, have been drinking more than they would have been because there's a sense of wanting to escape, like physically from lockdown, but also in larger sense from this whole situation. We don't know. We're very uncertain about the future. And that's like our brains just can't stand uncertainty. Mm. But actually learning to be with uncertainty was a huge whole area of personal growth right there. Like just being able to be with the unknown about how things are going to play out and just kind of keep showing up is huge. So yeah, doing 100 days of reset is an opportunity to do that as well. So it goes beyond that 30-day dry January mentality we have, which goes back to that kind of very goal-oriented, I'm going to get through this 30 days. That's why I stretched out to 100 days, because it was like, well, that's a lot of willpower.
It really is.
You might as well have a much nicer time if you just relax and go with it, you know? Yeah.
Did you find that, because I know, I mean, I've heard you talk about, maybe also, because you're in New York now, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're in New York.
Yeah.
But I think I was listening to you on Emma Gannon's Control Out Delete, and I think you were talking about just the life that you used to live, going out a lot, going to parties, work stuff and things like that. Have you found that your lifestyle over the past year has completely changed, when you started being sober curious, did you notice that what you wanted to do in the evenings and going to parties, did that change? Did you replace it with something else? And how did you deal with, how did your identity deal with that of becoming a bit of a different person, not the person that was going out and on wild nights?
Well, so I've been in New York for almost 9 years. So moving here kind of coincided with me initially getting sober curious. I'd been questioning my drinking and sort of dipping a toe out of the drinking culture here and there for about a year or so before I moved here. And moving here also coincided with me going freelance and starting working on The Numinous. And I sort of made it my mission to introduce, like to really investigate all of the kind of spiritual happenings that were happening here in New York when I arrived. And so sort of by default, my social life became quite different. On the one hand, a lot of my old drinking buddies, I wasn't in contact with them anymore. Because they were in the UK, obviously. And as much as moving to New York as a Brit, you get introduced to all the expats, and there's a very, very heavy drinking expat culture here as well. So my social life when I moved here was partly that. And then because the bars here are also open till like 4 a.m., then you can imagine all the Brits arrive here and they're like, this is amazing, the pub's never shut. And then on the other hand, going to like healing circles and astrology readings and gong baths and kundalini yoga sessions and kind of meeting a whole other community or becoming part of a whole other community where alcohol was just like not on the table and really seeing the difference and the contrast between socializing in those circles and at those kinds of activities versus the kind of drinking and nightlife culture, and really realizing that, oh, new me, perhaps real me, or well, it's all real me, but like new me, evolving me is actually much more drawn to these social situations where it's much more about sharing what's going on for us, where it's much more about connecting on a different sort of level. And so, yeah, my social life did change dramatically, which is not to say that I still don't love a good like dance floor.
Yeah.
And I have definitely, you know, been to raves and parties and all sorts sober and had the most brilliant time. But yeah, I'm less inclined to sit in a noisy bar and kind of shout to be heard, shout small talk to be heard.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some brilliant lines
to go to, and it might not be everyone's cup of tea, but you know, a full moon circle where we all have 2 minutes to share something deep that's going on for us. That's just more me. And again, I can plenty of eye rolling around that stuff. But so what? Honestly, so what?
Oh, I love that kind
of
stuff.
That's what I enjoy.
Me too. What I loved in here, it was literally like we obviously kind of used to go to the same kinds of parties. And I love the way you were sort of saying how the conversations that happen like from midnight onwards are a lot less interesting than when they were when you were sort of, you know, full vodka and sodas in, and you're finding it fascinating too. And it's just like, oh, and when I've been sober at parties like that, it's just, yeah, you sort of think, okay, well, I think it's time for me
to go now. Not like judging what anyone else is doing, but it's just really, again, just very interesting to be the observer, to be the outsider in those situations and to consider, oh, that's been me too. What was I actually getting out of that? I don't know if there was really much return on the investment of kind of time and energy that I've been putting into those sort of situations. We've all had this, the number of times I've woken up the next morning. I never had like blackout drinking, like my drinking never affected me in that way, but often had no clue what we were talking about for 4 hours last night. No clue whatsoever, which probably means it wasn't that important. Or if it was, then how sad that I'd engaged in this deep conversation with somebody and couldn't remember any of it. Like, it just started to feel like a real waste of time and energy.
So one of the things, I don't know why this really stuck in my head, but the sort of unexpected benefits of drinking. Well, actually, let's start about the benefits of not drinking. So, you know, obviously a good night's sleep, it makes such a difference. I mean, honestly, one of the things when people are burnt out, if they are also using alcohol a lot to help them switch off, help them fall asleep, which I think was one of the things perhaps you said you also used it for that. Was it you that said that in the book?
No, I never. It always really disrupted that. My sleep. Even very small amounts of alcohol would really disrupt my sleep. Well, and then it was one of the first things that I started to look at. I realized that even having a glass of wine would mean I probably wouldn't sleep through the night, and then I would just feel terrible the next day.
Well, there was someone else recently that was saying that they used it to actually help them to fall asleep. And it's one of the things common. When I get people to stop drinking, it's one of the, that and exercise are often the biggest, most common things that make the biggest difference to someone when they're burnt out in their recovery, because alcohol disrupts our sleep so much. And then you feel groggy the next day. So then you're on the caffeine. So then you're adrenalized and then you're wired and then you can't wind down. So then you have the alcohol to wind down. And so it's like this kind of vicious cycle. Yeah. But what are the benefits of not drinking?
Oh God. I mean, the list is so long.
I know.
And again, there are some really common ones, but then you'll find really personal ones too. But for me, the sleep thing, obviously, for me, the biggest one is just feeling so much more confident. And it's interesting. Like I used alcohol to kind of, because I had quite low self-esteem. I was always quite shy. Didn't necessarily feel like I fit in. And so I used alcohol and designer clothes and fancy job titles and all sorts of other things to make me feel more confident. But what I realized was that all the time I'd been sort of outsourcing my confidence to alcohol and these other external things, I wasn't addressing the real reasons I didn't feel confident, which is actually, you know, Project Love. Well, I mean, feeling confident is about really going inwards and accepting and embracing your whole self. Mm. No apology, no need to prove anything, right? And that takes time, and it really takes a deep look at some of the things that have made it hard for you to accept your whole self, which you can never do if you're continually just relying on alcohol to feel more confident. So for me, increased confidence was a huge one. I've always been quite productive, but I'm like ridiculously productive now.
Yeah.
And sort of like disciplined in terms of my work. I get a lot done. I guess deeper connections with friends and loved ones as well.
Mm.
And it's been great actually kind of continuing or finding new levels of connection with friends who I used to do a lot of drinking with, who now I don't. Sort of having different conversation or a different quality of conversation with people. I don't know, other physical benefits, like my digestion has completely cleared up. Like I used to always have digestive issues. That's just like
really
now. Yeah.
Wow.
Tried doing all the things, tried stopping gluten, tried stopping dairy. None of it ever worked. It was always really confusing. Why am I still really bloated? Removed the alcohol. It's completely gone away. Amazing. And I think it's partly because our emotional brain lives in our gut. And unprocessed, this is a bit woo-woo, but like unprocessed emotions kind of like sit in our gut, basically. For me, it just seems kind of logical.
Yes.
There's also the fact that alcohol actually does really damage our stomach lining and makes it really hard for us to digest our food properly and to absorb nutrients from our food. So yeah, just increased energy from more sleep, but also from getting more nutrients from my food and not having this toxic depressant in my system. There are tons. Mental, physical, emotional. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But this is what's so exciting. And this is what I don't think we talk about enough, because we talk about stopping drinking. We talk about taking a month off, and we talk about it because either it's seen within the context of you've got a drinking problem. So you need to stop and you need to handle this drinking problem because it's got out of control, or, you know, you keep having blackouts or whatever it is. Or you're stopping for a month because it's the healthy thing to do.
And you're being good.
I'm being good.
What about if you're always good? How about you're just good? You're good.
It's like, it's a good thing to do. You know, I'm on a bit of a health kick. I want to start the year feeling good. But it never goes into, I never hear people talking about all the many benefits of not drinking. And the one, I mean, I've shown you the book that the Sober Curious Reset, which is absolutely packed with post-its. One of them in here. Oh my God, it's my favorite one. Eyes get bigger.
Eyes get bigger.
One of the unexpected benefits. Are my eyes getting bigger? Day 81. And you know what? I don't often drink actually anymore, but this weekend I did drink. And I looked in the mirror, I was like, oh my God, it's true. My eyes look like all slitty and tiny and shriveled. It's true. But is that something, I had never heard of that. Your eyes get bigger when you start drinking.
I noticed this about, I mean, it's probably an optical illusion, haha. But I was actually looking at my husband as we were sat up in bed last night, just thinking about how his eyes, like, they're so what, he doesn't drink now either. So wide. And when I met him, he was a heavy drinker and we both drank a lot together. And he had these real kind of like hooded sort of eyes. It was like really cool. But now he's like, bing. And I've noticed this with other people too. I think there's the most obvious explanation is that actually you're retaining a lot less water. So you're just generally less bloated. Your face is less bloated. And so your eyes sort of appear to be bigger. Your features appear to be more pronounced. But also I think your eyes are just brighter and shinier because the eyes are connected to the liver, you know? And so if we have a clean, fully functioning liver, we have much brighter, shinier eyes. So they kind of just look bigger. But I just noticed it observationally. And then I did some research around why that was. And I'm just noticing the people in my life and myself as well. Like I always thought I had quite small eyes, but they appear
nice,
bigger.
Nice, big, bright eyes. But I do think this is something that needs to be talked about more. It's like the benefits of not drinking. And I think also, I think for me, that the thing that I would find the hardest and that I have found the hardest when I haven't drunk and I've gone out is that sort of having fun, that sort of the wheels come off, that sort of wild fun. And I enjoy having fun. And my fear is always that I won't have as much fun. And I think that's the thing for me to both explore and challenge and unpack, so that again, it can be, so they're bringing that curiosity, but then so that I can have a choice that, like, whether, you know, even if I do feel like now and again drinking, I can choose whether that night I go out and have fun and drink, or I go out that night and have fun and don't drink, rather than thinking I have to drink in order to have that fun. And it's just,
it's a really big one. And I think in a way, that's one of the reasons Brits love drinking so much. I think that we think that it's almost like fun is not really acceptable. It's seen as kind of like childish to have fun. And so we use alcohol as a way to give ourselves permission to have fun.
Or permission to be childish.
Permission to be childish, which is quite naive, you know?
Yeah.
Brits are pretty sort of like skeptical and scathing and like to be a bit kind of sophisticated. And actually, we love to have fun. We want to have fun. But having fun often does mean being more childish and just kind of like giggly and whatever. But I think that there's a certain quality of fun that we have under the influence of alcohol. And there are many different qualities of fun that can be had. When I first really started taking long breaks, and I'm talking like 3 months plus, I'd find myself just like stopping in the street and like giggling and like laughing because of something I'd thought about or a memory I'd had, and just feeling this kind of levity in my being that I was like, oh, actually the smallest things can be fun. When we're used to associating fun with the really kind of like hardcore extreme version of kind of wheels off roller coaster fun that we have when we're drinking, we sort of like bypass all these small ways that life is fun just in the day to day. So it's more like getting more of a sort of consistent drip feed of small doses of fun versus kind of grudging our way through life until we have this big blowout of fun, if that makes sense. It's a bit like getting drunk. Drinking to have fun is a bit like binging on fun versus saying, hey, I'm going to have fun today no matter what, and having these smaller kind of incidences of fun.
Well, it sounds
only like, just thought about it like that, binging on fun.
But also I think it sounds like, you know, from where I'm coming from, my sort of argument, my resistance to doing this would be, oh, but I would feel like the story I tell myself is that I would be losing these fun moments. But what I'm hearing is that actually, like with your confidence, like with fun, it's by stopping with the alcohol and stopping using alcohol in that way, you're reclaiming your confidence, you're reclaiming your fun and having more of it in the rest of your life. And also when you go out, even if everyone around you is drinking.
Yeah.
And so it's because I do think we have this narrative of when you give up alcohol, you're giving up so many things with it, but it will be good for your health and because, you know, blah, 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 or because you've, you know, struggled with alcohol dependence. But actually, this idea that if you take alcohol out of the equation, you get so much more and you reclaim so much of your life and reclaim so much of your energy and your fun and your confidence. I'm sold.
Most of which, let's think about it. Most of us start drinking in our teens as we come out of childhood and into adulthood. We associate fun in adulthood with drinking. We forget all the years that we had loads of fun before we started drinking.
Yeah.
And that it is something that we can... Like, just back to the piece about kids. I don't have children, but I can imagine how if you're getting through your day thinking, I'm going to have my me time with my glass of wine or my bottle of wine at the end of the day or whatever, there might be so many small incidences where you could actually just take a step back and laugh at the ridiculousness of the situation, whether it's like cleaning food off the walls or whatever it is that might have annoyed you because all you're thinking about is, oh, I want my wine.
Mm.
When you're no longer thinking that, when you're no longer in the grips of the drinking culture, and when it's not no longer got its hold on you, you're so much more present for just the ridiculous of life in the moment. And it's so much easier to just take a step back and laugh at these kind of like small annoyances or small incidences that can feel so aggravating when all we're focused on is like having a glass of wine at the end of the day. Again, I don't have kids, so I don't know if it's that simple, but I can just imagine that, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's also collapsing things together. So it's like collapsing alcohol into me time, collapsing alcohol into fun. Like you say, it's so interesting. Of course, we started as teenagers. We didn't have any period of being adults where alcohol wasn't a big part of that and a big ingredient in that. So Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. And it reminds me, for a while when I was younger, I used to smoke, and then I gave up smoking and I realized that actually one of the things that I liked was this feeling of taking in a big deep breath, which would calm my anxiety. So I started going outside, and instead of having the cigarette, and I hold my imaginary cigarette to my mouth. I remember when I met my partner, my partner that I have now, and telling him this on our first date. I was like, I've just given up smoking. What I do is this. And he's like, you're so weird. I was like, and you can do it anywhere.
Indoors?
Anywhere. On a plane, on a train. And I would just like hold it to my mouth and take in a deep breath. And it was that moment of taking a deep breath, which is, you know, deep breathing is so important for our calmness. So I had attached the cigarette. I took the cigarette away, but kept the benefit Amazing. Of the deep breathing.
I love that.
And it did make a difference. So it's like, you know, what are we collapsing into? That me time, that glass of wine, thinking of alternatives that you could do that actually Exactly. are even more nourishing and create even more whatever it is that you're needing. What is the feeling that you're needing? And then finding other ways to give yourself that.
Exactly. And it might just be, I need 10 minutes. I need half an hour on my own.
Yeah.
And so you
scream into a pillow.
And so you go out, and so you go out for a walk on your own. Yeah. Like you find a way to have a walk on your own for 20 minutes. Having a glass of wine while your kids are still screaming in your ear, you might feel like you're alone because you've disconnected from the present moment and you're not connected to them anymore. But you're not actually getting what you need. You know?
No. Exactly. And I think that is the problem. I think that so much of it is that we're not actually getting what we actually need. We think we are. And as soon as you take it away, it will be painful, uncomfortable. But then what you will start to realize is what it is you really need.
Exactly.
That the alcohol is masking. Mm-hmm. Ruby, this is such important and amazing work. It's so brilliant. I have one more question because I feel like lots of people be like, I've got a friend or my partner could really do with this. And you talk about this, don't you? About not to, or maybe I've heard you talking about it on your podcast or other podcasts, where you can't force someone to change when they're not ready. How do you recommend people do talk to their friends if they're like, well, I really think you could do with this book? Do you recommend people slide it over to them? Or do you, like, how do you have conversations with loved ones who you can see you're worried about how much they're using alcohol as a crutch and you'd love to introduce them to this?
I think engaging with the work yourself, and just kind of, you know, as you said, you don't necessarily perceive alcohol as a problem, but there's tons you can get out of that. So just bringing some of the questions that are raised in the book into conversations with your friends and speaking it always to your own experience.
Yeah.
I really am a firm believer of leading by example, and that actually, like, there's been a huge ripple effect in my life. Practically everyone I know in my friendship group and in my family has addressed their drinking to some degree. Like I said, my husband now completely doesn't drink at all. My brother, who's like a DJ, lives in Berlin, is on like 5 weeks off drinking currently. Like, just everyone I know and friends as well have sort of addressed their drinking. And not because I went around to everyone saying, you need to stop drinking. It was more like, I'm deeply engaging with this myself. This is what's happening for me. Not even necessarily about drinking, but like, this is just how I'm living my life now. And then wanting a piece of that, basically, you know. But yeah, you cannot change. And it goes across the board. You can't change people. We cannot change people.
No.
We try. And it's the root of so many of our problems. But all we can really do is focus on giving ourselves what we need and then just trusting that people will notice that if they're ready and hopefully join us.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant. I absolutely love this. This has just really inspired and excited me. So thank you. And for a final question. So what have you, I'm so interested in what you're doing now. So what have you got planned for 2021?
Well, in my other life, I mean, I've actually just started a self-publishing company. The Numinous has become Numinous Books.
Yes.
I love writing books. I can't write more than a book every couple of years myself, but I love working with other writers to help them bring their books to life. So I have a full roster of clients and books that are going to be coming out across 2021 with the Numinous. So
that's so kind exciting.
Of where my main work is at the moment. But then also, like you mentioned, I have a podcast, Sober Curious. And my Sober Curious podcast is really about talking to all different kinds of people who've engaged with all sorts of different substances and behaviors at all different sort of ends of the spectrum, just to really give a broad view of like how we as a society kind of engage with different substances, addictive behaviors, what we're numbing out from and what we can do to address that. So that's work that I'm continue to be committed to.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. Like Thanks I say, it was such a joy for you to, yeah, to have you on here because of how much you've inspired us over the years. But this book, honestly, and now I'm excited to go and read Sober Curious, which I haven't
Sober yet. Curious kind of sets up the philosophy. And then this Sober Curious reset is like how to apply this to your life.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And for people to go and find out more about what you do and your books, they go to, is it rubywarrington.com?
Yes.
Yes.
Rubywarrington.com is my personal website. I'm on Instagram intermittently. That's another addictive behavior that I'm like currently moderating.
Me too. I'm definitely socially curious.
socially curious, definitely. But yeah, at Ruby Warrington is kind of where I share most of what I'm up to there. And if people are interested in this, there's also a Sober Curious Facebook group where lots of people who are engaging with the work and asking each other questions and sharing what they're up to. There are lots of people in there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Ruby.
Thank you, Selena.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.